Welcome to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, where I, Monique Chambers, am joined by businesses that have sold their product and services overseas. Welcome to this week's entrepreneur interview with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Sam Borge of Bortex. Now, Bortex is one of those places, you know, us poor wives have to stand for ages while our husbands choose, and mine in particular, he sees one thing and then he asks, how many colours do they have it in, so he doesn't have to keep trying things on. Do you get a lot of that? Do you get a lot of complaints from women that you have like loads of stuff in there and, you know, it takes too long?
Well, to be honest with you, often they're the ones making the decisions. So they speak on behalf of their better half, saying that there isn't enough choice, but in reality they're the ones getting frustrated because they're calling all the shots. But we don't complain really, the longer they're in there the better for us.
I always get jealous actually, because when we go shopping together he ends up with more than me. I think because he does that thing, if you have the trousers in five colours, he takes five colours. You know, and I would just not do that. I don't know what it is with men shopping.
We're creatures of habit, and once you find something that seems to work, you just want an endless supply of it, actually. We have quite a funny approach, really, with the preferences of the archetypal male. I mean, we essentially have a wide demographic, 18 to 65. So some people would say, you know, how is it possible that you can tick the, you know, the box for, uh-huh, for all shapes, sizes, and preferences? But you'd be amazed what a basic chino or basic Oxford shirt in, you know, six different colours can do for a man's ease of preference while shopping.
But Bortex has come a long way, even in the sort of time I've been in Malta. It used to be that it seemed to be work suits. Now you've got quite dandy suits. There's some really amazing shirts that I wish you made for women. You know, some really amazing patterns, nice collars. You know, there's some real detail in there that's... It's kind of changed.
Well, I think the change follows the evolution of the company. My grandfather, Sonny Borge, had started the business in 1964. It was as a private label manufacturer.
Okay.
And when we branched into retail initially, it was essentially end of lines from the production that we were making for some top European brands. And it was essentially very high formal. As we all know now, the sort of the evolution of our own brand, Gagliardi, the Bortex multi-brand concept, we've really decided to become an A to Z product group and sort of fashion house, which really ticks a number of different looks, like good pocket squares, wide lapels, different compositions in your shirts, statement tailoring, separate waistcoats. We work with four or five different shoe brands. Goodyear, welted. It's all about being able to dress for any occasion as opposed to just, you know, a business suit.
That's it, because you can actually come in and buy the whole shebang. It's not just coming for your wedding suit now,
it's
coming in for...
And now we want to go a step further. We really believe and want to see it sort of almost as a gentleman's headquarters. So we're selling lifestyle as opposed to clothes. We believe that it's moving beyond just hanging something on the shelf and expecting people to come and pick it up. We believe that, you know, being able to sort of visualize the lifestyle that you want through, you know, fine dining, wine, cars, architecture, history. I mean, the big motivation or inspiration behind the Gagliardi brand is the Hand of Mr. Ripley. So I'm not sure if you've read the book or seen the film. But good old Dickie Greenleaf, I think, really shows us and gives us a taste of what it means to be dressed appropriately and how it makes you feel.
Absolutely, you know, that's a real difference for her.
We always say that you need whatever room or environment you're going into, you have to feel, and I'm not going to use anything cliche here, but you have to feel, you know, above the rest. And that adds a real dimension, I think, to what we're trying to do.
Absolutely. No, I like the choice, because it's no longer, it's not like, dare I say, the Marks and Spencers, where you know you go in to find your, you know, suit you can chuck in the washing machine type of thing when you're travelling. It feels luxurious, even though actually your price bracket is...
Yeah, we have a price to quality ratio. So obviously one thing that I would make clear is the fact that the prices we retail at here in Malta are the lowest we would worldwide. It's very similar to a lot of other brands.
So shop here, don't shop overseas.
I shouldn't be saying that, should I? But yes, so we work with much lower margins. We don't go on sale throughout the year. And really, for the value of that, I mean, we work with all the top Italian biella mills. So, you know, Zegna, Loro Piana, Cerruti, Rida, Di Fabio. I mean, these guys really are the Rolls Royce, Maserati and Ferrari of the fabric world. When you link that with, I mean, the brands that we manufacture for, so private label, I mean, we are sort of at the upper, so I wouldn't say luxury, but the upper premium level. So it'd be people like Hackett, Hugo Boss, Nicole Fari, Paul Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of make with that level of fabric, and then you put those two together, you brand it, and you put it in a prestigious retail environment, all of a sudden, the same level of garment which you'd be spending 2,000 euros for from Zegna, you're spending 400 euros from us.
But you also have a tailored line as well, don't you? A made to measure.
Exactly. So after all, I mean, there was a huge evolution. I think for the 60s, 70s and 80s, the production was based in Malta. Then you had the emergence of the former Soviet bloc.
Uh-huh.
China, which, you know, the tiger economies came out in a very big way. So we quickly had to move production away. And 2 years ago, we were very anxious to try and bring some production back.
Uh-huh.
When we could command a much higher average order value through sort of a bespoke garment, we were faced with the perfect opportunity to do so. We brought back some of the master tailors that we were part of the Bortex DNA and family in the 60s and 70s, and we've managed to successfully launch a made-to-measure program, which at the moment we're offering through some stores here in Malta,
Okay. Through
the UK, and the next step will be to digitalize. And I wouldn't go quite as far as the Indochino route, but certainly a made-to-order, personalized garment online.
So you kind of take your measures and you...
Yeah, so essentially, if you knew that, I know that I'm a 40 regular with slight alterations, and the alteration would be a small alteration on the cuff and a small alteration on the hem.
Okay.
But then I still want to be able to choose my fabric, I still want to be able to choose my lining, my functional cuff, non-functional cuff, single-breasted, uh-huh, double-breasted, Italian shoulder, Neapolitan shoulder,
ooh,
British structured shoulder.
There's different shoulders.
Of course.
Ah.
Lapel widths, you're talking about lapel widths.
So
yep. At the moment, when you talk about ready-to-wear, we have to evolve the product over a slower, you know, time scale. Even small aesthetic changes of how much wider lapels get, because you're still sitting on certain amounts of stock. You can't, you know, make wholesale changes overnight.
Yeah.
You need to add a half a centimetre every season until you kind of...
Get to the big old lapels.
That's it.
So, have you always been into fashion? Obviously, your grandfather, your father ran the business before you. Has it always been something you've loved dressing up?
You know, I ask myself the same question quite often. I mean, my dad jokes at me and says that when you were, you know, 14 and 15, you were bugging me to get the Selfridges to go into the branded areas so that even for your socials back then, you'd be best dressed. I mean, I never used to kind of appreciate the fact that I was quite excited by, you know, the art of the appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether it would have been clothes per se, but I definitely had this, you know, big brand and appearance sort of obsession. I was at public school in the UK. I actually was advised to kind of do law just because.
Okay.
Yeah, very, very.
How much fun are you at parties?
Not fun at all. I think I always joke with people that if you want, you know, a natural remedy to fall asleep, speak to someone who's done law.
Mm.
But yeah, I did that, and because they said it would be accessible for anything else I'd want to do in my career.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And in all fairness, I think my dad made a good fisherman, because he kind of dangled the carrot, the Bortex. You know, he wouldn't be coming back to do anything, you know, which the company was already doing. We're still manufacturers. We're also in retail. Here's a baby from its embryonic stage. Come and launch this brand.
Okay.
And I thought, I have nothing to lose, really. If it goes wrong, I can go back. I've got a minimum of 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
To go back to my boring calling in law.
But well dressed, at least.
At least well dressed. And if I was a barrister, at least I'd have a good headpiece too.
Yeah, that extra accessory. Yeah.
So it all evolved quite nicely. And I think now looking back, I'm very glad that the sort of life cycle took the path that it did.
So how long have you been heading up Bortex, or how long have you been back?
I haven't been heading up. I mean, now I'm in the position of COO, but mm-hmm, I started purely on Gagliardi and
mm-hmm,
focused on that. So I've been there 8 years now.
Okay.
And I think for the first 4 years, it was solely on trying to get this thing off its feet, which no one thought would be possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's a totally other story for another day, unless you want me to sort of elaborate a little bit later on. But that was quite, it was amazing, because it was like an amalgamation of force of energy. At the beginning, everyone's like, okay, we're trying this brand, we've tried it before, it hasn't necessarily worked, not with this Gagliardi brand, that is, but, you know, how are we going to get access to the market, how are we going to build a little bit of momentum, where are we going to get our volumes from?
Uh-huh.
And we had, you know, two or three accounts which really opened up a number of doors for us, and all of a sudden you had this huge, you know, energy attribution from the rest of the people in the company, because now all of a sudden this is a Maltese brand which is going international. It's got some real legs. How can we make this thing jog? And then how can we make this thing sprint?
Ah.
So beyond that point, things then started to change for me. I managed to sort of move up the ranks based on some of the successes that we had early doors.
High five. So how did you get this sort of brand that had no name before? What is Gagliardi? Is it made up? Is it a...
So it's a three-syllable word, which is very important for us. It's from the Roman dialect called Gallardo, and it's a nickname, or we associate the nickname with that given to my grandfather.
Okay.
Which is, you know, slightly romanticized rather than fantasized story of, you know, his life, which is, you know, having, you know, six brothers, having fought the Second World War, being, you know, awarded military crosses for bravery, traveled Italy, and getting lots of seeds of inspiration. Obviously, the Italians at that point were really interpreting what the British had been doing in Savile Row. Everyone thinks that the Italians, you know, the high point and pinnacle of fashion. As we all know, obviously, it all started with the British gentleman.
Thank you.
And it wasn't up until that point that he jumped and, you know, he was he was in the British Merchant Navy, and he started his wheeling dealing. So he was, you know, stopping in New Zealand and trading butter, and then up in India and different, you know, fine silks and cashmere. And he came back to Malta with a little bit of money in his pocket, and he decided to start a denim factory in his garage. So we played off this story, and we felt it was very important to give this brand depth and to move away from the New England heritage, which people like Ralph Lauren, Gant, Tommy had
done
to death, and do something, and this is where the talented Mr. Ripley comes in, which does all of the things that those aspirational but affordable brands do, which in itself is kind of like a blue ocean strategy. Ralph Lauren pioneered that, and create a prestige environment which is really attractive to the senses. So I'm not sure if you've been in any of our stores,
but yes.
You know, sight, sound, smell, we've got these beautiful patented perfumes which people are writing to us all the time with these natural sprays in store. Price to quality ratio on the products, and customer service to suit.
Sorry.
Pun unintended. But hilarious nonetheless. So yeah, no, it's... And then it was a case of how do we roll this out? How do we really bring this to market in a way which mitigates our growth expectations, the risk of certain markets, belief systems in the brand, again, building up volumes and economies of scale.
So immediately you were looking outside of Malta. It wasn't just something to start with.
No, immediately, straight away. In fact, I mean, we started... Thankfully, we had the Bortex multi-brand, but the Bortex multi-brand at that time was it was three stores. Today, obviously, there's 10 on the island. And that was kind of like a nest bed. But at the same time, we were immediately out for the wholesale market. So we said, let's go to menswear shows. We went to a number of them. And how could we get it? Because at the time, we have to remember that we're living in a different age today of direct-to-consumer and digitization and e-commerce.
Yeah, this wasn't around.
Eight years ago, it was there, but it was kind of not really appreciated.
Yeah. You would have never bought so much stuff online, especially.
Exactly. So we still were going down traditional routes. Today, if you ask me the same question, we do things totally differently. But by hook or by crook, we got to these menswear exhibitions. We got into good spots. Good people coming on the stands, and I got very lucky with the next CEO of Harrods, Nigel Hall, who essentially came on. I had a rugby hero of mine called Jason Robinson, who just walked in. He'd won the World Cup with England a few years before, scored in the final. I'm rugby obsessed, and you know, he's meant to be a director in this other stand selling leggings for, with, you know, retinol-based leggings for women, which reduces cellulite.
Yeah, I was going to say it sounds awful, but now I'm interested.
I don't blame you. I'll give you the reference.
But was he wearing the leggings?
Unfortunately, not.
Oh, okay. You've lost me again. Okay. Where were we? So Jason Robinson.
I must have given him a massive headache or God knows what, but I managed to get a jacket on him. And again, you know, it was one of those, you know, lucky moments that this thing fitted in perfectly. And he just kept on coming back on the stand to try different jackets. And please, you know, we hit it off. And the minute this Nigel Hall came on, we just all gelled. And I was joking that he was representing the brand already when he wasn't, obviously. And this Nigel said, you know what, I like you guys. I love the look of the brand. Malta, it's a great island. Great affiliation with the UK. And with Ireland, he's like, you know, I'm going to send over my buyers. He flew them over that day. They came over on the following day. The following week, they were in Malta. We had our first account sitting opposite, next to Hugo Boss and opposite Hackett in Arnott's in Dublin, which is what Selfridges is to London. Essentially, today, the Western Group actually own Arnott's.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, here we go. The brand's actually up. We had Joe.ie, which was the biggest, and still is today, I think, the biggest BuzzFeed site in Ireland. They came with Jerry Flannery. Jason Robinson by this point actually was representing the brand, because then I said, now you have to come and be an ambassador. So he came out, we had this big launch, and we started trading particularly in the formal area, because remember by this point, today, as you were saying, the brand was lifestyle, but we started with what we knew best, which was the formal. We were outperforming these brands. So we, from having 25 square metres, all of a sudden we were given 50 within two seasons. Then we had, you know, people of interest from the Balkans who'd won Hugo Boss, and they wanted to do it. Then by this point, the Vortex model was really evolving fast. And what we were doing in Gagliardi, we were replicating essentially here, and vice versa, taking all, you know, the transferability of the different concepts. Until, you know, we had a Russian partner, a Scandinavian partner, an Algerian partner, web, e-commerce, which today is the thing that, you know, we're excited about all parts of the business, but that's where I really start to get off my seat when I'm, you know, seeing orders coming in from South America, and we've got these, you know, authentic review services which give you, you know, service and product reviews which you can't change, and 95% of them coming back with glowing feedback. It really is, that's where, you know, it gives you the sort of, the real hunger to say, hold on a second, there's something actually here, because the beginning is really tough. You're constantly questioning really whether the hell this brand, which you guys have just come up with out of thin air, can actually hold its own with a very competitive marketplace.
So how, you must look really far in advance. Fashion is one of those things where,
so this is,
you know, they're showing this winter's collections and we're just...
So let me explain. People, I mean, you work, it's even more complex than that, because you are working in advance. Well, let me start from the beginning. You're working in the moment as it is now with the current season from a retail perspective. So at the moment we are closing autumn winter 18, moving into spring summer 19 in stores. So you're changing around the collections, your marketing materials. You're also, you've just finished selling autumn winter 19 for wholesale.
Okay.
So that's for, and we're starting to plan our deliveries for autumn winter 19. We are creating a collection for spring summer 20. So at the moment we are, you know, like crazy, going to the fabric fairs. We've got our inspiration for the season, our mood boards. And then you're starting to conceptualize for autumn winter 20 with yourselves and with some of the brands that we manufacture for. So one of the things that people kind of forget, and the things that I'm most proud about, which obviously I can't, have to look to the family with a lot of admiration for, is that we pretty much do, as a business, anything that one could do in the clothing sector, aside from, you know, weaving fabric. But we manufacture for ourselves, we manufacture for lots of top brands, and we manufacture a whole load of different products, whether it's, you know, coats, waistcoats, suits, separate jackets, technical wear, gilets, anything that you can basically do in the formal wear production area. We source globally with branded product. We represent other top brands within a multi-brand context, so Ralph Lauren, Gant, Lacoste.
Yep.
We have a hire and ceremonial area. We do made to measure. Now I've just, you know, managed to convince our board to move into school wear. Okay, I know you're going to give me a left hook now over the fact that we're not doing lots of women's wear.
You will be. But it's just such a shame.
If you have your way, we'll be doing it tomorrow.
Well, you know, by next winter's okay. It's a struggle, and, you know, why shouldn't women have...
For example, particularly this tailored look, I think it's very much coming back in a female context. Would you agree?
Definitely. I mean, everything that's coming this summer is, you know, wide pants, blazers, and you just can't find such nice ones.
Oversized blazers, right?
Yes, yeah. And
I've seen this, but yeah, I mean, I think the nod to the tailored gent or the tailored woman, incorporate, even if you're not, you know, as we were talking about earlier, high formal, but always with a tailored piece, I think there is no more epitome of like chic or elegant that you can get.
Yeah. Really. I love, you know, long sleeve t-shirt, waistcoat, jeans.
There you go.
You know, I'm as happy as that as I am in a gown. And it's just difficult to find really beautifully tailored clothes for women that aren't ridiculously expensive. And, you know, if you're going to buy something, you want to keep wearing it and keep wearing it. So it has to have an element of, you know. And we have the aspirational lives that you're targeting for your men and be spontaneous.
You know what it is?
Those men need us women, so we need to be as well dressed. There's my argument.
Can you imagine all the men would be saying the same?
Yeah, but it's...
Wait, what do you think?
You could have, like, dating in store. Sorry.
Wow, that's what I should propose the next board meeting.
There you go.
In-store dating. Vortex is pioneering...
No, by doing the lifestyle side of it. You know, you've created this men's brand.
Do you think of the rise of the men? I mean, because you're talking about now... I mean, I believe there is a rise of this metrosexual man.
Better dressed men and, better...
Well, I don't know if it's just better dressed. It's better groomed.
Yes,
it's
the whole thing.
It's better dressed. Mm-hmm. It's self-care. Before, I mean, it was... Again, we spoke about these generational shifts. I mean, you've got the, you know, the baby boomers who are, you know, that's my granddad, that's my nan.
Yeah.
He's fought the war. post-baby boomers, still with this, I think, more of an appreciation, but less of a meticulousness when it comes to, you know, grooming and haircuts. And and you've got these millennials who are coming in now who've got this big nod back to, you know, vintage and classic barbers
and quality and timelessness
and classic cars and fine watches. And when I say fine watches, not because they're fine necessarily, because they are, you know, engineering masterpieces.
Well made, yes. Yeah.
So it's a very interesting shift. And I think that the mutual appreciation now, it may not always be that you've got, you know, the better half or the lady coming in with the man and you know, making all the choices and getting impatient.
No, but I think you look at someone, you know, you look at the royals, the British royals, for example, and they're now getting known for wearing the same thing repeatedly. So it's kind of good enough for them.
It's good,
you know, it's good enough for us to not have to have this disposable fashion anymore. And, you know, I love to have something new. I'm not saying I don't. But I just think there are certain favourites that you always want to have for, you know, first day at work or your travel outfit or your whatever. And I just think there's something there. You know, room for expansion. That's all. You're a young guy. You've got plenty of time to introduce this women's brand.
But you're not holding your breath.
Not holding my breath until September, October. But no, in like all seriousness, you've taken, you know, already the brand has changed.
We are. Look, it's part of the evolution. What we're saying first is let's master the men's and do it properly.
Yeah.
Stop trying to be jack of all trades and masters of none. Once you're ready with that, and we're ready, if you notice, we are actually starting to reintroduce non-Gagliardi branded products into our stores so that we can start learning. Because ultimately, we can't, you know, not appreciate the fact that what we've been doing for all these other brands over the years has given us an inherent
knowledge.
Competitive edge and knowledge versus what other people in the market wouldn't necessarily have. So we're being humble and saying, we're doing this well, but we've still got a lot to improve. We've taken notes because a lot of customers have, you know, very similar to you, have said, listen, what the hell are you doing? We, you know, you've got this, you've got potential business here, which you're seemingly turning away. And once we're in a position to merge that, then in typical fashion, going back to Dickie Greenleaf, you know, his, you know, and the talented Mr. Ripley, we will cater for both men and women.
Thank you very much, sir.
You got it out of me finally.
I got it out of you. So apart from that being in the future, what other things do you see? So you've got e-commerce coming is going to be a major thing.
So e-commerce.
You really talk like somebody who's been in business, not just in the fashion business. You know, you use all the jargon and the business book language. Is that like a passion for you as well that you bring into your work, or is that just something you're surrounded by people? It's
listen, first of all, I think you have to, I'd be lying if I said if you don't immerse yourself in these things, you're not going to pick it up. But I am, you know, constantly hungry to keep learning. I'm just about to finish an MBA. We don't look at me, whatever business it is that you're doing, whatever you're doing, ultimately the same business principles apply. Obviously one needs to tweak those. I'm very lucky to have, I have my father who, I mean, I don't know if I should say that, I wasn't really planned, so there's only one generational shift in between my dad and I, which means that he's essentially, you know, a mentor, a best friend. I'm very blessed actually to have that relationship with him because he allows space for me to make certain mistakes, but also to have that hunger and that enthusiasm. And then he imbues that wisdom and gives me a very good vista to really see how difficult situations can be handled. So I have all of those elements, but very much that, you know, the business, the clothing, Vortex as a group obviously has multiple divisions, not just in the clothing industry. Again, I've been very lucky to be immersed in those two.
Okay.
And I do see that there's a very exciting future, not just in what we're doing with the brand, not just in what the business is doing generally, but in the opportunities that this, you know, we're living in a new age, an information age, which essentially is similar to the agricultural and the industrial revolutions. It is totally flipping the status quo on its head, and the sooner that any of us, I think, can grasp that and leverage the tools that are out there faster than anyone else, then we can disrupt. And I read a brilliant article on the McKinsey Business of Fashion report, which is essentially about self-disruption.
Okay.
And what we can do on both a personal level, a group level, and a business level to put ourselves in very uncomfortable situations in the short term, which have almost immediate and long-lasting effects in the medium to long term, should we actually manage to innovate within that space. effectively. So what is it? What is that source of innovation? It could be a product, it could be a system, it could be a process. In their case with e-commerce, we used e-commerce as a tool to market a brand much more cost effectively than, you know, someone like an Armani and a Versace. You've got millions and millions and millions to spend. We just called it our guerrilla marketing, you know, tactics. And maybe that's for another talk. But essentially what we're trying to say is that you can do things, being nimble, being small, we could do things that other brands couldn't do. And where we go in the future now, I mean, I just gave a talk at the London School of Economics 2 weeks ago to a panel on the rise of the platform. And that, you know, we're no longer selling products, we're selling services, but beyond services, people are getting integrated into, now, Google have got the search platform.
Yes.
Facebook have got the, you know, personal platform. Airbnb, the OTAs, Expedia, Booking.com have the realm of sort of the, you know, the hospitality area.
Yeah.
And you can do everything on these platforms, essentially. And these guys are going through. And this is where now I'm glad that the Europeans have taken upon themselves with GDPR, because there's a danger to giving away all this information.
Mm-hmm.
But the cost of information is the cheapest it's ever been. Access to information is the easiest it's ever been. What you can do with those two things, if you use the right tools we were talking about earlier, whatever business you're in, I think it's limitless, really, the possibilities.
That's it. And people still, you know, they still want to have something literally tailored for them. They still want to feel special. They want to have something that's beautifully packaged. And we're having less and less time to be able to go around stores in some cases to have the whole experience. And so being able to know that I can still buy that when I'm, you know, so many people travel for their work. When do they get a chance to go and buy their next round of business suits? They're either at an airport or they have to do it online and be able to.
So why not create this omnichannel experience? It's funny that you're saying this, you know, which fuses, you know, hospitality with fashion, with grooming, with all the savoir vivre, you know, fine wines and cigars and all of these things. I mean, probably you're going to sniff where I'm getting at here, but integrate the experiential side with technology, with this knowledge of the information systems, and create something which is totally new.
Uh-huh.
So you asked me the question before was, where's the vision and where do you want to go? I mean, I don't want to say any more than that.
No, but you've got it sussed.
Yeah. I hope so. I may be sitting here in 10 years' time and got it all wrong.
But at least be well-dressed.
At least we'll be doing ladies' wear.
I hope that's not your downfall. It's been really, really fun and really interesting talking to you. That's Sam Borge from Vortex, and I've been Monique Chambers, and I still will be. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this week's edition of Exporting Malta, produced by me, Monique Chambers, with technical assistance from Carmelo Grech and Redent Abdillah. This show is aired every Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. and repeated on Fridays at 7:30 p.m. here on Campus FM.